And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Happy, no, I'm not going to say that.
Say it.
No, I'm not going to say that. Happy day after the season. How about that?
Okay, yeah.
I wasn't going to say anything that controversial, but it could come off as disrespectful, so okay. I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Yes, happy day after the season.
It's always an interesting day. It has really changed because used to be locker room cleanout was a major day. So you would have the season end and kind of that abrupt ending, whether it's the playoffs or the end of the year or whatever. And then this huge news day, and then you kind of didn't sink in till a couple of days later.
Yeah.
And now things are a little bit different where the season's over. We've got nothing going on today that I know of. Danny, Will, Colin, others I'm assuming are going to speak tomorrow, and then we'll kind of be done with it then. So tomorrow's a really big day, but randomly today is not.
Yeah, not a ton going on. Kind of a quiet day. And you know what? Not like the NBA, what do they call that, Black Monday in the NFL, where all the coaches get fired?
Yeah.
Don't do that really here.
Well, yeah, because the whole league makes playoffs, so.
Yeah, or they'll just fire you when they want to fire you. Yeah. Like Steve Clifford's been.
Well, he fired himself.
He's been a lame duck for a while.
Like a month ago.
Yeah. So the guys that you know are going to get fired. And then, you know, yeah, some of those teams, we'll see if they get fired after the postseason. But
Charlotte has a new ownership who's making a decision on this. I'm actually really curious to. God, not to get off on a tangent, but like, you know, my connection with Charlotte, we lived back there. We had season tickets to the Hornets way back in the day. And I grew up a Hornets fan in Utah, which was kind of a funny thing. But ownership has been so bad for so long. And yeah. Not just Michael Jordan. Look at George Shinn, the first owner of the Hornets. I mean, just a buffoon. And I wonder if some new ownership, I hope, because here's the thing, basketball is so important to that community. They are such a basketball, I mean, North Carolina, they are such a basketball area
right.
that are thirsting to support it. See the few years they were relevant with like Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson and how much that community loved it. And then it's just been oasis after oasis of sheer suckness.
Incompetence, yeah.
Including losing the franchise for a brief period.
Right. Yep. It's a mess.
So I'm hoping, I'm cheering for that ownership. I'm cheering for a good hire there. May they make one.
Yep.
Because they've kind of got a guy, maybe, in Brandon Miller.
Yeah, they've got a guy. They've got a face to build around.
Yeah,
I don't know,
but
whatever.
You told me that about the other ball a couple of years ago, too. And
he just won't stay healthy.
Yeah, right.
When he's on the floor,
he's not playing.
Sure. If you don't play, you're not a player.
Dante Exum, if he would stay healthy. I'm sure people are still telling you that about Ben Simmons. I wouldn't be one of those people.
No, that ship has sailed.
Did you have a good weekend, Ben?
I had a great weekend. Worked a lot, you know, just because Jazz game's Friday night and Sunday and early Sunday game. But, yeah, had fun Saturday. And you, how was your weekend?
Late night Friday game, Ben, day Sunday game.
No weekend.
That didn't exist. Although the Saturday, you know, little time I did get to spend, hung out with my neighbors. I have really enjoyed getting to know various neighbors.
Yeah.
Because I've lived in my house for a long time, but I never got to know the neighbors because I never had anything in common. Like my direct neighbors, of course, but not like.
Right, extended.
Like hanging out in the neighborhood. And now kids are a factor. and, you know, school functions and all that stuff. And I'm getting to know my neighbors better. And I've really enjoyed.
And the weather was beautiful.
Really enjoyed that process. Yeah. And the weather's gorgeous.
Not today, but it was.
And I don't hate the idea of my kids making a mess at someone else's house for once.
Please do. Take off. Have a good time.
Oh, man. So, yeah, it was fine. You?
Yeah, I went to a wedding on Saturday night. Or a wedding party. Wedding reception.
Anybody I know?
Nope. I know. I didn't know him.
Did JP alone?
No, I didn't know him.
Oh, okay.
It was friend of a friend.
So. Oh, those are the best weddings when you don't know the people.
They threw a great party.
Then you can truly make a fool out of yourself.
Congrats to the lovely
who
wedding
was that?
Couple.
Who invited that guy? I don't know.
Yeah, no, honestly, that was it.
I don't know. That bozo fell out of nowhere.
I hugged the bride in her dress. I was like, I've never met this person.
How do you get an invite to a friend of a friend?
Well, my girlfriend. Her friend. But she'd actually never met her in person either, only online. It was
so
weird.
How does that work?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how these things work. That's my whole life. How did I get this job? I don't know. I started showing up and they were like, yeah.
You keep
coming back. Okay. That's what I do. That's my goal.
Well, then that's when you go after the open bar and just see where the night takes you.
Great taco bar.
Because you don't, like, your connection to the person who's getting married doesn't even exist. I mean, you could.
Right.
I mean, you
her
could do
anything. Parents hate me. It doesn't matter. I'll never see them again.
The whole other side of the family hates you. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Right.
But the whole party hates you. It doesn't matter.
Shout out to Ben and Mel for their beautiful wedding.
Where was
first
it?
First I'd heard of them.
Good venue?
Someplace downtown, 6 South and State Street.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I'd have never been there before. I didn't know it was a thing. It was weird. But I stumbled in I walked in. I was in control of myself. I'm not implying anything. I was in control of myself and had a good time.
So, Ben, I always give this advice to people getting married, having gone through it over a decade ago now. My wife and I paid for our own wedding.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of important to us for various reasons. So we did approach it with budget in mind. Like, I worked for the Jazz and we had our wedding reception.
Uh-huh.
At the arena, and turned out to be a rad place for a wedding reception. But I had this, I did notice this as we shopped for venues. As soon as the word wedding comes out of your mouth, the price triples.
Yeah, they know.
Because it's the industry, I guess. I think it also is kind of assume that the father of the bride is paying for everything so they can
rack up whatever
bill they want. They can play into that, you know, father-daughter affection and really pry the dough out of the wallet, which I find a little frustrating. But tell them when you're interacting, getting to know the venue, tell them you're from the Elks Club. I'm not kidding. Tell them you have a youth group. Tell them, like, anything but wedding until you get a price out of their mouth, and then be like, oh, yeah, well, we were just kidding. It's actually going to be a wedding reception. Or don't even tell them until the day.
Yeah, why would you tell them?
Yeah.
It's a family reunion. Technically, the family is reuniting.
Don't say wedding.
One person's wearing a dress. But yeah, it's a reunion.
Get a figure before the word wedding comes out of your mouth. Hey, just say, like, stop them at the door and say, before we go any further and I tell you anything, how much does the thing cost? Hammer that down.
Yeah.
Because as soon as wedding comes out, they're like,
will you write that down for me?
Oh, this is now going to be $9,000. And, oh, you want us to set up tables and chairs for you? That's at least $5,000.
Yeah.
Linens? Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started. Don't get me started on linens. All right. Yeah, there's way more news than we need to
wedding
dive
hacks.
Into this wedding talk. But I'm glad you had fun
at
some stranger's wedding.
Yeah, me too. Shout out to them. Happy for the couple.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that we did not have very many 8:30 starts this year, Ben. I'm so glad the NBA adjusted that rule that nationally televised games are going to be bumped up to 8 rather than 8:30. So I am grateful for that because that Clippers game was late.
Yep, that was a late one.
Was late.
Good. Jazz played well. Jazz last three games were all pretty interesting of the season. Won two of them last night or yesterday afternoon. Will Hardy really understood the assignment. Jazz were in a position to win that game and finished tied for the 9th best odds, or finished tied technically for the 8th best odds with the Brooklyn Nets to win the draft lottery, and said, Keyonte George, you're not playing the entire fourth quarter. You're on a heater. We don't want you on the court if you're going to be making shots. Kenny Lofton Jr., you're the reason we have won the last two games. You're not playing. You're not playing late because he got in the game after playing only 19 minutes in the first half, kind of through the first three quarters, and hadn't done a lot, but he got there in the fourth quarter and was passing the ball all over the floor. The Jazz were dicing up the Golden State Warriors. And
can't have that.
Bryce Sensabaugh didn't commit a foul, and they called a foul, and he wanted Will to challenge it. And Will was like, yeah, we're not trying to get those calls right at this point in the season.
Hey, Bryce. Calm
Relax.
Down. Calm down.
Over we're not here. Using our challenge today.
It's all right. This I know is, your heart's in the right place.
You're right. But appreciate you.
What's his name on the second row is shutting his pie hole.
We are, George. We are shooting for the eighth seed. This needs to be an L, and it was.
Keyonte George played 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Coach Lacombe and I were talking about him possibly being on pace for his career high, which is like 32,
yep.
I think, because he had those 21 points early.
Yep.
And then it was like, oh, that – because we have conversations, obviously, about the game as we're watching, and it's like, well, that conversation just disappeared.
Didn't play for
because
probably the last
play.
16 minutes of the game, 18 minutes of the game.
And I hate the concept of trying to lose on purpose. I hate it. And we saw it all over the place.
Whole league. Yesterday could have been a great
brutal.
Day of basketball,
no.
And it was pretty boring.
How about Denver? By the way, you're welcome for all of my knowledge that I spew upon people. Denver losing on purpose was the smartest thing they could ever do. And they were on the brink of blowing out the Spurs. And they were like, well, wait a minute. Let's stop guarding Wemby is
yeah.
what we're going to start doing. And true, Wemby had to hit a game winner. But there's no way they should ever have been in that game.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah,
they,
right.
and Denver's like, wait a minute. How this is playing out? Let's see. Clippers and Dallas. And no, we don't want the top seed.
No. Top seed doesn't do anything for you.
Get out there and lose. What a consequential loss. And no matter what the NBA does, they can't fix it. They tried to start all the games at the same time yesterday. That doesn't work. You could tell by watching each game, and we had a bunch of games up in the studio, obviously. You could tell when they read the scoreboard on other games because the lineups completely changed.
Yep.
Teams surrendered. Teams tanked a game on purpose. I think Minnesota lost on purpose.
They may have. They may have because, yeah, so now the number one seed in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and credit to them. You know, 2 years ago they had the number two overall pick, and 2 years later they have the number one overall seed. Pretty impressive, at least in the West. They're going to face one of the – probably the Warriors.
Because of that top seed, Ben, here's my hot take for you on your point. Not a chance OKC makes it to the conference finals.
Yeah,
not a chance.
Probably accurate.
Because they're either going to lose to the Warriors, which I could easily see happen. They're certainly going to lose to the Clippers or Mavericks in the second round.
I think Dallas is going to win that series. So
even if they get through Golden State, they got to get through Dallas to get through Denver. That ain't happening.
And now Denver gets to play the Lakers or the Pelicans.
The Kings are going to win, I don't.
I am extraordinarily interested in seeing what the Lakers do in the play-in tournament tomorrow. Because if they win, they play the Lakers in the first round. If they lose, they play the Nuggets in the first round. Excuse me. If the Lakers win, they play the Nuggets in the first round. If the Lakers lose and Anthony Davis is a little beat up, they get a second chance to win. Do they feel like they can win a second play-in tournament game in the loser's bracket? And face the Thunder in the first round, who they are really good against because Lakers are huge.
Or get the Nuggets.
Thunder are tiny. Or you get the Nuggets.
I'd lose on purpose.
Would you risk losing a play-in tournament game?
100%.
To play a one-off against Steph Curry and the Warriors, thinking, well, if we win that game, at the very least, we don't have to play the Nuggets. And by the way, you don't have to play the Nuggets till the conference finals. You would have the...
Yes.
As I mentioned,
yes.
You would
I'd
get
lose.
The Thunder in the first round, who they have beat up all year. And then in the second round, you'd get either Dallas or the Clippers. Pretty fascinating.
Yeah. No, this is a gruesome take. But to the people, like we had a tweeter the other day who sent something like this at us, and I get the sentiment, but it says, you got to beat them at some point. Champions win. It matters when you play a team. Like the only reason Cleveland has a title with LeBron is because they were the last team to face the Warriors, and the Warriors were so beat up and Draymond had stacked up all those technical fouls that they couldn't get it over the hump. And they very nearly did, by the way. The reason Kawhi has a championship is because they played the Warriors last. And by that point, they were really beat up.
KD tore his Achilles and Clay had a torn ACL. Right. Yeah, you're missing two of your three best players.
So if you, the goal is, I mean, happenstance matters when it comes to the playoffs. And if you can delay playing a team, it matters. What if you get a team coming off a long, grueling series? Or what if you get a team like the Jazz when they went to the finals who just sat on the pine for 2 weeks?
Yep.
You know, those sorts of circumstances matter. I mean, it's part of what makes it fun. But if you can delay playing a team that you're mismatched against, that matters. That matters a lot.
And,
you know, I hate to speculate that about injuries. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But, like, you know, how healthy is Jokic by the time you play Denver? Or how tired is he?
Yeah.
Or whatever. These things matter. Now, I'd still bet on Denver to come out of the West. But, like, if you're the Lakers and you made a living off getting to the Western Conference Finals last year, somehow fluked your way to the Conference Finals, this is how you fluke your way to the Conference Finals.
Yep. And, yeah. And
you
then
beat
you hope-
OKC. And then you got a grueler in the second round, but you feel like you could beat Dallas or the Clippers. And then, boom, you're back in the conference final.
Yep, exactly right. And then you hope, yes, by the conference finals, Jokic has twisted an ankle.
Denver's beat up or whatever.
Yep. The Eastern Conference is very interesting and obviously has local ties because it's Donovan Mitchell and the Cleveland Cavaliers. They absolutely tanked a game that had they won, they still had the chance to get the 2 seed, but did not want to face Miami
Or Philly
in the first round. Now, the Knicks ended up winning, so it wouldn't have mattered, but they still could have gotten third, and had they gotten third, they would have played the Pacers in the first round, or in the first round, and then in the second round would have played the Knicks and would have avoided the Celtics, but they were so dead set on avoiding playing either Miami or Philly in the first round, whoever won that play-in tournament game, they tanked to the Charlotte Hornets, who were really trying to tank, because they were trying to get the third best odds of winning the draft lottery outright, and now they're tied with the Trailblazers by winning that game yesterday. In Cleveland, the Hornets won a game that Cleveland actually could have won a higher playoff seeding had they gone for it, but they sat everybody to start the game and then really everybody in the fourth quarter. They lose, and now they're going to play the Orlando Magic in the first round, thinking that's a better matchup than Miami or Philly, which I agree. But basically, they scheduled their death sentence because they have to play Boston in the second round, and they're not going to beat Boston.
A hot take. I don't think they're going to beat Orlando.
Yeah, they might not beat Orlando.
Oh, I would so... If I were the Cavs, and Donovan Mitchell specifically, I would so rather play the Pacers than the Magic.
And then the Knicks in the second round.
I would so much rather play the Pacers than the Magic because the Pacers don't guard anybody. Now, the Pacers will score 160 points on you, and I'm only slightly exaggerating that. But they're not going to. They're not interested in guarding anybody, and so Donovan can go out there and score 35 a night in a series and probably take an L. But maybe win with the Magic. Donovan's going to average 20 points a game.
Yeah, on 21 shots.
He's going to shoot on 21. Yeah, yep. 20 points a game on 21 shots, and it's going to be brutal. Orlando is going to be an absolute grinder, and even if Cleveland gets past Orlando, I bet you Donovan and probably Darius Garland, too, are going to have terrible series because they can throw dude after dude who could guard all night at those guys that are bigger, longer, and more athletic. It's going to be a brutal series for Cleveland.
And if you lose, if you tank to avoid Miami or Philly.
And take an L to Orlando.
And take an L to Orlando. Oof.
Rough.
I mean, you're already firing J.B. Bickerstaff, but you really might have to trade Donovan Mitchell at that point.
Well, the rumor's already out there.
Yeah, the rumor's out there.
The rumor's already out there that they're going to cut bait in the offseason, which is smart, by the way. Don't wait till the trade deadline.
That's why the Jazz were in good shape.
We talked about the Jazz. Every day that goes by on that contract, his value goes down a little bit.
Yep.
So, yeah, it would be the smart thing for them. And you know what? It would be a smart thing, too, because Darius Garland might be a tad lower than Donovan Mitchell on the ability scale, but not that much.
Well, it's just a flaw of what the design is. It's a 6'1 guard trying to be your best player. It doesn't matter.
Let alone have two of them. It doesn't work.
Yeah, the gap in how good Donovan Mitchell is and how much better he is than Darius Garland, who cares? Like, it doesn't work even if they were both good.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Scoot Henderson ain't going anywhere. I wouldn't get in the Trae Young business.
Right. Right. It's just a flaw.
It doesn't work.
No. Now, if you're 6'7", and your Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, works a little bit better. And even then, I'm not sure that's going to work.
Oh, man, even 6'5".
Yeah.
I mean, I always said that Jimmer Fredette would still be in the league if he were 2, maybe 3 inches taller.
Look how good Sam Merrill is. Well, he's bigger than Jimmer is.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference.
You just have to be big enough to guard multiple positions and not be a complete detriment. You know, Sam Merrill's probably not going to go take the other team's best player out of the game, but Sam can switch on two or three different positions and not be a complete detriment.
You can't pass over him just by every time he's on the floor.
Because he's 6'5", right?
Kyle Korver was not a great on-ball defender, but he knew where to stand.
And but he was 6'7".
Right. Go ahead. Just go be in that area and you're tall enough. And you can get your shot off all the time. Another issue for Jimmer. Not to get off on a Jimmer
tangent. No, but that stuff matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Donovan being 6'1", maybe, matters. Mm-hmm. And he's a heck of an athlete, but, you know, he admitted here with the Jazz he had to evolve his game to play more on the floor. And it's like, wow, 6'1 guys who have the ball the whole time are still 6'1". But, yeah, I don't see Cleveland making it past Orlando. And I certainly don't see him making it past Boston. Boston, though, is rooting for who in the first round? I mean, either one I'd take, the Bulls or the
Well, they're going to play. They're almost guaranteed
to play Miami or Philly. Yeah. Sorry about that. I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Philly's always worse in the playoffs than you expect because Joel never shows up. But Joel is playing better than he's ever played before. I know he's coming off an
injury. But they'll beat the Bulls or the Hawks, no problem.
And they'll beat either Miami or Philly. I mean, they'll beat either of those teams. But Boston is so good.
I would guess. I'd rather have – jeez, who would I rather have?
I'd probably honestly rather have Philly.
How healthy is Joel?
He didn't play last night. They said it was precautionary. Yeah. But I don't care. I can beat the rest of Philly. Joel, I don't think he's going to beat you by himself. Miami, they get things clicking. They've got the best coach.
I know. I love Miami. But God, they are old.
And neither of them are going to beat Boston. This is the truth. Neither of them are going to beat Boston. Boston is too good.
And the Knicks are not making it out of the first round either.
I think the Knicks are going to. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the Knicks might not. Good for them for playing. Good for them for saying, we want the second seed. They went out and did it. And you hope to get Joel at his least healthy if that's who you end up playing.
Whatever. I'm not a Tibbs guy. It doesn't work in the playoffs. It really hasn't ever worked in the playoffs. And we watched the end of that Knicks game, and Jalen Brunson had a chance to win it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a timeout before. And I said to Coach Lacombe, I said, okay, here's what they're going to do. They're going to inbound to Brunson. He's going to crash into triple team and take a crappy shot. Nothing creative about it in the slightest. Uh-huh. Nothing, you know, just totally caving to the star player. And what happened?
Went up against Alex Caruso, who is bar none the best.
It wasn't a triple team.
But it's the best perimeter defender in the NBA.
Who totally forced him into the worst shot you've ever seen.
Oh, I mean, he knocked the ball out of his hands immediately, and then it was scramble time.
It was awful.
Yeah. Because
and it was like, this is the guy that you're telling me is one of the best coaches in the league?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And I love Jalen Brunson. He might be All-NBA first team this year. He has been unbelievable. But set a screen because I don't.
He's a 6'1 guard.
Will Hardy said something
you
really funny.
You can take that out of a series.
About Jordan Clarkson one time, which is, Jordan, we know you can score on anybody, but don't try to score on Drew Holiday. You know what I mean? Like, whoever it is. And it wasn't that example exactly.
Take it easy on yourself, pal. Yeah.
We know you can do this against everybody, but don't make it harder than it has to be. And that was making it harder than it has to be. Alex Caruso is the best perimeter defender in the world. Just set a screen and get me on anybody else on Chicago.
You, Brunson, go take it to that guy.
Nobody else is guarding.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, that's what it, and it just bugs me, the lack of creativity. Or any sort of, like, here's where I like Spoelstra, because he got LeBron to play a certain team style that I think actually really benefited LeBron's career, because he had all these coaches in Cleveland that just pointed at LeBron and said, hey, you, LeBron, go beat your guy. And then took credit for it because LeBron could beat anybody. Like, it's the easiest, laziest way to coach ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to do it with LeBron, who's a runaway freight train, who you have to intentionally foul to keep off of the rim. It's another to be a 6'1 guard who's going to dribble around and be easily guardable.
Yep.
I mean, it's frustrating. And it's like Tom Thibodeau, the genius coach. Well, you don't even have the clout to tell your player, like, hey, Jalen, we're going to do some action, and if you get the open shot,
take it.
But if you don't,
kick it. Yeah, sweet.
Like, we're going to dial something up that's going to get somebody an open shot. But these cowardly coaches are like, okay, guys, we're just going to inbound it to Jalen and get out of the way.
But they did win in overtime.
Like, go back to Mike D'Antoni. Sorry, we're over. But anyway, go back to Mike D'Antoni when he coached the Rockets. Tell me what Mike D'Antoni was known for when he coached the Suns, Ben? His heyday. What is his calling card?
7 seconds or less.
Gonna move that. We're gonna fast.
Yep.
We're gonna get the ball going. We're gonna get it up. We're gonna take as many shots as we can. Blah 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 blah. What happened the second he signed on to coach the Rockets and James Harden was his point guard?
Slowing it down.
Gonna be the slowest team in the league. We're just gonna give it. We're gonna give it to James,
yeah.
And we're gonna let him let the air out of the ball. Yeah. But coach, this totally goes against all the principles that you believe in when it comes to coaching basketball.
He's the best player.
You look at him dribble.
Yeah.
I mean, just and the owner loves him so.
And then in the West, a couple of good series. We've talked about the Clippers and the Mavericks a lot. And then, fascinating, Suns versus Timberwolves. I think that's going to be a fun series.
I want to pick the Clippers so badly. And I know you, like everybody else, are in love with the Mavs. And they did make good deals at the trade deadline. Like, they made their team significantly better.
I'd feel a lot better if I knew that Kawhi Leonard would play. And I have no idea.
And
if
he's probably hurt.
Yep.
I mean, at some point, do we just assume some players don't get the benefit of the doubt?
Mm-hmm.
And just assume that Kawhi, like, okay, he's hurt.
Kawhi's one of them. Yep.
We're going to see the meniscus story in T-minus, you know, whatever.
Yep.
But if Kawhi plays,
they have a chance. Yep.
Well, there you go. All right. I've got a take for you on the last day of the season we can get to.
Okay.
Coming up a little later in the show. Tim Lacombe is going to be at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. Top three stories next. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Creep on in, on in. Is that this song?
Sarah, have you ever put five on it? No.
How do you know this is an old hip-hop song? Because I know exactly what it is.
Yeah, Jake knows the song.
Want to remind you about Hercules Hero of the Week. Nominate the youth sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with their Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union.
I, too, have never put five on it.
Like $5 on a blackjack hand I have.
Okay.
Is that what he's talking about?
Nope.
No? Okay. Well, then I'm guessing.
Well, they remade the song. I actually really like the remake that came out a couple of years ago. That was really good, too. So, anyways.
The cover?
Yeah, kind of. It was for a movie. Anyways.
All right.
It was good.
Well,
kind of came back into the.
Well, there you go. Top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com. Let's get started. Where are we going, Sarah?
Number one, the Coyotes owner issues a statement on the future of the team.
Yeah, and basically doesn't say anything. This guy, with all due respect, and I really do feel for the community in Arizona, the hockey community, that is on the precipice of losing their team, and it's going to be in Salt Lake, if not by the end of the week, by the end of the month, but everything I've heard says this week. We will see if that comes to fruition or not. This owner is exactly the type of owner you fear. And, you know, when Ryan Smith was buying the Jazz from the Millers, I think there was always a little bit of a fear for everybody that you can be a hometown fan, you can have the money, and if you're unreliable, it's a real mess. And
there are bad owners.
He's a terrible owner.
Yep.
He always is trying to propose the next thing, which is going to be the great solution. And, you know, we're going to move to this arena, or I'm going to work with Arizona State, or this is going to happen, or I'm going to win this auction. And it's just, we all have that friend, right? We knew that kid in high school or college or whatever who, like, hey, man, I'm gonna get it for you next week, or I've got my next job lined up and everything's going to be fine. It's like, oh, you never do it, do you? You talk, but you never do it. And that's this Morello guy. And it's going to cost them their team. And we can be grateful that we had the Millers, that were such great owners for so long. And then Ryan Smith has backed up everything he has said. He wanted to buy the Jazz, he bought the Jazz. He wanted to buy RSL, he bought RSL. He wanted to bring a second team. They announced this a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when he joined in with that venture that also owns part of the Boston Celtic or the Boston Red Sox, et cetera, all this group. He's going to have a team within 18 months of that. Like, it's nice to have that as opposed to the, oh, I'm always pitching the next thing and there's no there.
So I agree with you about this, Bozo. He, you know, I guess I don't know enough about his history to truly make a diagnosis, but it certainly would seem that way. But I do know this, that the Well, Ben, we were talking about the Hornets. The Hornets moved to New Orleans. George Shinn, huge bozo. They had a franchise back in Charlotte because there is a good basketball community there and there is support for a franchise. I don't even remember, Ben. What was it? It was like 2 years. And then they put a franchise back in Charlotte. Now, the ownership group wasn't all that strong then, and then Michael Jordan wasn't very good, and now we'll see about this new group. But Phoenix, they've got a franchise coming their way, according to reports, I guess. As soon as they figure it out, as soon as this bozo delivers on what he's talking about, they're going to give him a franchise right back, and he's going to pay the money that he gets from Ryan, he's going to pay back to get the franchise back. So there's like, I'm glad there's kind of a no-lose for the hockey community of Phoenix because I'm sure people are bent. But this dude has been given so long to figure it out. Imagine if you owned a JCW's franchise.
Yep.
I love the good folks at JCW's. And you've got the Red Hot Bountiful location. You're in a strip mall. And the strip mall owner comes to you and says, hey, we're doubling your rent or whatever, or it's, you know, not going to work out. You say, okay. And you call JCW's. You say, you got to bear with me. We're going to be working out of the back of a truck for a couple of months, but then we're securing a lease on this place and it's going to be great. JCW's would say, sure, all right. But as soon as the operating out of a truck hit its second year, JCW's probably is going to say, you know what, we're going to give our franchise rights to someone else.
Yep.
I mean, that's how it works in the real world. So this guy got himself into a pickle, having nowhere to play. He's basically playing in a parking lot, has been for multiple years. And the NHL is going to go, no, we're going to give the franchise to somebody who has a building and is going to put it on stable footing because this isn't going to work.
And can I give you my opinion? He's never going to get it together.
I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't.
He's not. I'm not saying Arizona won't make it back or hockey won't make it back to Arizona. It will not be with Alex Morello as the owner.
Yeah.
He's going to take his $1 billion he's getting from Ryan Smith and he's going to vanish. And that's probably better for everybody.
Well, I hope, you know, the fantasy is still out there then. I mean, there is still a road to that.
If I were a
for Phoenix
fan in Phoenix or Arizona, my hope is that Matt Ishbia does it, the owner of the Suns, because he's got all the money and he decides that's what he wants to get into.
Or someone else. Yeah,
but
I got it.
He's already lost it once. Like, come on, man. So, but I'm excited, and I'm expecting to hear more news throughout the week about how quickly this is going to get announced. By the way, the MVP and the superstar, it seems like, of this Arizona Coyotes team and somebody I'm very excited to get to know in this market is the GM, Bill Armstrong, who sounds like the coolest guy.
The guy.
Who sounds, he's done a great job getting this roster to a spot where it's rebuilding and is very promising and within a couple of years is expected to be very good, but seems to handle things like such a human being. It's going to be nice to have a face like that coming in to represent the team.
Yeah, sure. But he's got this is what's important to me. He's got a name that inspires confidence, Armstrong. You follow an Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know? That guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, David Weakling. No one's following David Weakling.
If you're at a neighborhood meeting and like somebody with the last name Armstrong raises their hand to volunteer to be like the coordinator during the, you know, potential disaster, I'm like, yeah, I'm following Armstrong.
Backing Bill Armstrong.
Armstrong knows where he's going. He's going to be the guy that is going to lead everybody to the bomb shelter or whatever. He will be calm and he will be level-headed and make the correct decisions. I'm getting on board with a guy named Armstrong.
I'm excited to see it.
Neil Armstrong?
Stretch Armstrong?
Lance Armstrong?
All good people.
Kind of. Next.
Number two, Mark Pope receives a warm welcome at Kentucky.
Okay, I got goosebumps yesterday. It was during the Jazz game. This was kind of going on. Remember, he got announced on Sunday afternoon, very non-Provo-y of Kentucky to do it this way. And that's not why they did it. But they got the entire 1996 Kentucky team to walk off the bus. All these old guys now, but had won the title. Mark Pope comes off last. He's holding the 1996 trophy. The Rupp Arena crowd is there. It's full. 5,000 plus fans had to be turned away. Couldn't even get into the arena. It was special. Kentucky basketball is special. It has that aura. And they, after killing Mark Pope when the hire was announced on, was that Wednesday or Thursday night? It was Thursday. We're on board and backing him the way they need to. And I'm can't wait to watch how this plays out over the next couple of seasons.
So I'm not surprised at all. I mean, it was a little campy for my taste.
It was, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on, yes.
But that's part of my point. PR, the politics of the sport, Mark Pope has always been really good at that. I mean, I think back to, you know, his first year, 2 years at BYU, and there was always a goofy video coming out of Mark Pope being energetic.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember before, God, when was it? Was it the NCAA tournament? Wow. Anyway, where he was jumping around the hall. Do you remember him jumping off his teammates? Was it the NCAA? It couldn't have been. Maybe it was the NIT. But he's like bouncing off his teammates, and there's this big energetic thing. And like that side of it, Mark Pope really gets it. And you think that like, oh, that's kind of a superficial part of the job. Well, it's a big part of the job, believe it or not. Like you have to generate excitement. What was honestly the best thing that Urban Meyer ever did for the University of Utah was energize the fan base. Mm-hmm. The fan base hasn't lacked energy since. And he did it with the Musts and all this stuff, and he kind of did it overnight, and they sang the school song at the end of the game, and then it didn't hurt that they were really good. But all of a sudden, that fan base has been totally energized the whole time and has been – and that puts Utah at an advantage compared to, like, Oregon State, where there's five people in the whole town. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It matters. So Pope's really good at the energy part. He's really good at that. I'm not shocked that his press conference was a bonanza.
And then the fallout is all the transfers at BYU, and they just seems like every time I get on KSLSports.com, there's a new name. Richie Saunders, Ali Khalifa, Dallin Hall. I'm missing more. I mean, it's just
well,
everybody.
Listen, whoever gets the gig is going to be in a tough spot, there's no doubt. But I think post-Danny Sprinkle, we can all get over the panic of transferring, can't we? Can we all get over the panic of, oh, they're never going to be good again? I mean, the guy came in and replaced the whole roster and
sure.
won a game in the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
I mean, won the dang league outright for the first time ever for Utah State and did it with nobody coming back. So, oh, I'm sorry. There was one redshirt freshman missionary coming back who turned out to be pretty good. So I'll give him that. All right, next.
Number three, the Jazz clinched the 8th best lottery odds.
So the Jazz will have a 26.2% chance of moving up into the top 4 spots, a 6.2% chance of winning number 1 overall.
All right, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we will watch it. We also have an NHL lottery we've got to watch to see if the Coyotes move up.
If they get bounced down a couple of spots, though, I just want to see the look on whoever is representing the Jazz face. Because I'll never forget Kevin O'Connor's face when they had the 3rd best lottery odds and they got bumped to the 5th spot.
Yep.
And when the Jazz came up 5, the look on his face was just like, you have got to be kidding me.
Yep. No luck. Yet to see if Danny Ainge can bring a little bit better luck. I know the Jazz didn't have it last year. They didn't get jumped.
Oh,
they stayed
man.
At 9. But the 8th pick. Jazz have never owned the 8th pick in their history. Only one team ever with the 8th best odds of winning the lottery has done it. Which is surprising. The 9th team has done it quite a bit. 17th's done it a few times. 8th team has only done it one time. And it was when the Cleveland Cavaliers got the pick from the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers traded their unprotected first-round pick and Baron Davis to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Mo Williams, former Jazz man Mo Williams. And 2 months later, they traded him in February, I guess, so 3 months later, in May, it came up that the Los Angeles Clippers won the lottery. Of course, they had to go to Cleveland, and it turned into Mr. Kyrie Irving. Brutal. Don't trade unprotected picks. Especially that same year when you know you're going to be in the lottery. Unreal. So we will see if the Jazz can get some of that same luck.
All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Coach Lacombe joins us at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. We'll kind of look back on the season, get his thoughts on the playoffs as well. Jacob Ben, you're listening to 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What's up?
remember this one too.
Absolutely. These are all hits.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. And know enough to talk over that part anyway. All right. Hey, Ben, I've got a story for you. Speaking of music, I think it's hilarious sometimes bad decisions that are made by people that I envision being addicted to their own self-import.
Okay.
I think this would fall under it. Did you see the latest blunder from CBS?
I did not.
So William Joel played
Mr. Bill Joel.
Some sort of important concert at whatever MSG. It is, Dolan's place.
Yep.
And CBS picked it up. Now, what would you say? Billy Joel has many hits. What would you say is probably numero uno?
Piano Man.
I would agree.
Yeah.
It is his nickname, after all. Well,
it's about him.
Apparently, a bunch of markets in the Eastern and Central time zones cut mid-Piano Man for the local news.
You got to get to the evening news.
Got to get to the evening news. Now, one station offered an apology and an explanation, Ben. So here goes. He says, as a man who grew up right next to Billy Joel's hometown, who went to the last play at Shea, it was my duty to apologize to everyone about cutting off our telecast of Billy Joel tonight. Not to get into the weeds, but there was a special report after the Masters, and it wasn't accounted for by the powers that be beyond this building. He also wrote that tons of stations in the Eastern and Central time zones cut the local news, and the problem wasn't at those local stations, but, quote, was a mistake by people higher than the local affiliates, sadly, unquote. So some suit and tie wearing person
who'd never heard the song before
was like, nope, we have to get to local news. This is by the book, people. We're obligated to do this. And someone says, but it's a Piano Man, dude. It'll be over in like 90 seconds. It's not a long song to begin with. I don't think our local affiliates. Nope.
Got to get to the top of the news.
Who's in charge here? Me or William Joel? Not that bozo. This is my show.
Yeah.
He's in the third verse, sir. We can just hang for the Nope.
They're about to
cut now.
They're about to put bread in his jar. No way.
Stop it. Cut it. I bet you not one affiliate would be angry if they were. And listen, it's a monster inconvenience to be 90 seconds late and do a newscast because they plan it out by the second, right, or whatever. But I bet you not one affiliate would complain.
So you cut the fluff piece.
Because do you know how many David Jameses of the world, and I just say this to about DJ because he used to actually pick up the phone to people calling, complaining about something or other, yep, that had to do with the station. But there are the David Jameses of the world who are fielding phone calls from people who are like, why did they cut out a Piano Man? Yep. I waited all night. All night for Piano Man.
And I've been there. I went to, who does The Way It Is? Who sings that song?
Eric Clapton?
No, Bruce Hornsby, the one that Tupac covered.
Oh.
In Changes. I went to that concert. I waited the whole concert for him to play The Way It Is in his encore. Yeah, there were people who are mid-level Billy Joel fans who just wanted to hear Piano Man. Waited the whole time to hear it. All right, Uptown Girl, that's fine. Move on. I want Piano Man. Cut it off halfway through. There's a bank robbery in Pennsylvania. Gotta get to it.
I went to see Mark Knopfler, the Dire Straits guitarist, who is a talented person. But listen, I sat through the entire thing, and it was just weird out there guitar
stuff.
Not for me. I'm just sitting there like, I just want to hear Money for Nothing.
Money for Nothing.
I want to hear those familiar chords.
Yep.
And I want to hear Money for Nothing. And he played it at the very end.
And it was worth it.
And it really wasn't, because he played it at like four times the speed. I'm just going to play my way through. Bye. It's like you kept us for 30 minutes through some groove you learned from a holistic person in India. And we all just want to hear Money for Nothing. Now, if he would have stopped mid-Money for Nothing and been like, all right, I'm done. Hey, guys, They told us we had to be done by
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
Sound
and
ordinance.
Tick, that's 10. I'm finished. But don't
worse.
You think? Don't you think that's one person who's addicted to their own self-import?
Yes.
One person who's like, no, this is how we're doing it.
I remember the time I cut off Billy Joel. Yes. Yeah. Someone's going to...
You know who has a bigger ego than Billy Joel? Me!
Me.
But sir, it's the piano I dub! Now, if it were Sinatra or something, maybe. But who is this William Joel person?
Not Joel. Not you, Joel.
Stay tuned. Tim Lacombe joins us coming up next. I want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Peach Doors and Windows. More next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Our next guest joins us weekly, Ben, and it's always really weird for me because I all of a sudden don't see him on the reg, which is a weird feeling. It'd be like, Ben, if I all of a sudden didn't see you for a month.
Yeah, that'd
you
be, know, bizarre. It'd be bizarre.
It's very strange. But his appearance on the show is brought to you by Spherion. You have better things to do than scramble to find your next great hire. Let Spherion staffing do it for you. Visit them online at spherion.com/Utah. That's SPHERION.com/Utah. Joining us now, he's my co-host for Jazz Pre, Half, and Post, the one and only, the coach, Tim Lacombe.
My hell, I saw you yesterday. I mean, what's
I know.
Soapbox?
Oh, I couldn't even sleep last night. I was like, oh, man, I'm not going to get to see Tim.
I guarantee you're so excited you don't have to put up with my zany, crazy personality on the reg.
Oh, I love it.
You guys are going to have to do hockey pre-half and post or hockey mid post. How do they call that when you do in between the first and second? You guys ready to do that? You guys learning
I would have to learn a few things about hockey.
I would, too. Tim and I both already work a lot of nights. To just double that,
it would be every night.
It would be extreme.
It will be every single night.
We could just get an apartment in the building. We could just make little like cubbies that we slide out of and then do the show.
Put Jeremy on it.
Yeah, George Costanza slept under his desk. You can do that.
Yeah, we could figure something out.
Hey, he hung the televisions on the wall.
I mean,
I'm sure this could be done.
Dude, our setup is pretty baller. I mean,
as
baller as like a 4-foot by 8-foot studio can possibly be.
With varying temperatures.
Very, very varying temperatures.
All right, the Jazz finished the season 5-25 over their last 30 games. Young guys got a lot of opportunity. That was what it was mostly about, was get those young guys out there, but they also lock up the 8th best odds of winning the lottery. I guess in that sense, it was a success post-trade deadline. And look, I don't think you were going to want to re-sign Kelly Olynyk or Simone Fontecchio either. So I recognize what the Jazz did. Do you think they got out of it what they were hoping?
I do. I think, you know, it became a developmental year, no doubt. And really the focus became those young guys. And I think all three guys, we talked about this a lot during the season, but they all took different routes, you know. And I think what the neat thing is that they all kind of ended together on the team. They were playing, you know, started games and playing starters minutes. Unless they, you know, were on the wrong side of a huge run that one game where they didn't get starters minutes, but with all that, they learned. You know, they learned what it is to go out there and play in the NBA, what you have to be ready for. You know, where are the deficiencies in your game? You can feel them when you're out there. And so I think all those things were so positive. And it was painful. You know, there's pain involved in this process. But we're through the extraction now for the season. And I think as you look back on it, their positioning in the draft, the improvement of those three rookies, them getting their the kind of feet set in the NBA. And then I would add to that, I think Colin Sexton made a huge jump this year, and I was really impressed with John Collins. He started out so, like new guys do, you know, just trying to find himself, and lo and behold, really, as a small ball five, kind of found himself, and then some, really consistent the last part of the year prior to the injury. And so I think, if, all told, if you look at it, positive all the way around.
What did we learn about Coach Hardy this year?
That he's very humble. You know, he started out with an idea, and it, and about 6 weeks into the season had to, you know, go a different direction with how they wanted to play. And, you know, it really was hard to do, but, you know, basically just kind of threw that plan away, started anew, and was it, obviously in 2 years he's been handed quite a few difficult circumstances to deal with, and he just continues to focus on what's important, and that's growing this team and growing himself. So I think these years, although difficult, have been really valuable for him, and I think he comes out of it. I'd give him an A. I mean, I know every single iteration of this team that he's had has been good for a period of time, really good for a period of time. So I think if the guys can come in next year with two things on their mind, play hard and pass, which are the two things that he threw out there, I think they can be in a good spot.
I don't, you know, it's unfair to say, because we will need several years to be able to grade this fully, that, you know, the Jazz made all the right picks at 9, 16, and 27 or 28, wherever they drafted Bryce Sensabaugh. There were probably better players on the board. G.G. Jackson, the second round, looks like a very good player. But I don't think the Jazz whiffed on any of these players. Am I fair to say that, that they might have three NBA players, which going 3 for 3 in the first round is really difficult to do?
I agree. And I do think, like I said, I mean, the way these guys came about it, Sensabaugh spent most of the year in G League. Taylor started down there and spent some time, and I really thought for different reasons. Taylor was, you know, he's such a young kid, 1 year removed from college, and kind of a fast riser that skipped part of the learning process. And so I think he had to, you know, go down there and just understand the nuance that underlies just making buckets and getting rebounds and blocking shots. And I think he did that. I saw him do things like shot fake the corner in one of these last games. Guy flies by, and he gathers himself, plays off 2 feet, and makes a beautiful skip pass across the court for three. I mean, that play was not in his bag to start this season. So I think he, you know, those things were really great for him. Sensabaugh, he was able to kind of chisel his body down. He was obviously a great scorer with the Stars, but it's his passing that stands out. And every night, you know, it wasn't just scoring. He checked a lot of boxes and did a lot of things. He rebounds great for his size, passes the ball really well, better than I thought. And then I think he's a walking bucket. And then Keontae, I mean, he should be all rookie. The only thing he needs to really kind of add to his bag is a little bit more physical size. I think just getting stronger will help a lot. And then, you know, just being focused and consistent for long periods of time. I think we saw a lot of times where, you know, he would make a one-handed crazy pass that, you know, you could tell he was fatigued or didn't think about it. And so to tighten some of those things down, but man, he had a great year, and he certainly ended the season yesterday with one of his best games, I thought.
Did anything surprise you about the season in retrospect?
Man, just how dapper Mike Smith is daily.
Oh, that shouldn't have come
as a surprise.
Yeah, not at all.
No, not really. I mean, this is new territory for everybody. New territory for me, for sure, watching a team that I'm, you know, watching daily on a rebuild and moving their two best players and deciding to kind of strip it down and build it back up. So I would say that, again, I think you judge by not wins and losses, but a lot of the things within the context of the game, within the context of the organization. And no, I nothing really surprised me. I think, it went according to what I thought maybe a rebuild looks like.
I'm excited for the playoffs. I've been excited for the playoffs for about a month now. And I'm not sure I was rewarded with the playoff series I hoped for in the first round, but then again, I probably couldn't have told you what I wished we would have seen. But of the four playoff series that we know are going to happen, Bucks Pacers, Cavaliers Magic, Mavericks Clippers, and then Wolves Suns, which one do you think is the most captivating?
I think they're all really interesting for a lot of different reasons. The Eastern ones, I think both of the underdogs are going to win. I think the lower-seeded teams. I think the Magic will win the series against the Bucks. Or excuse me, the Pacers will win the series against the Bucks, and I think the Magic will beat the Cavs.
Wow.
Yeah. In the West, I think the Dallas-LA probably would be the one. I guess of all those, that's the one that I'm most interested in. Man, you talk about, and you know this, Ben, you've watched so much playoff basketball in your lifetime, but it becomes about, you know, individual guys that can carry their team. A lot of isolation, a lot of half-court stuff, a lot of big, you know, you got to make buckets at big times. And I think both teams are stacked with guys like that. And so I think Luka, Kyrie, obviously, and then, you know, the Kawhi, Harden, George, like every one of those guys can really take games over. So that, I'm intrigued to watch that one. Dallas has been playing really well, and I would probably expect them to win that series. But, man, you never know. That's a lot of veterans that have been through a lot, and that'll be a fascinating one to me.
Looks to me like Rudy Gobert probably is going to win another Defensive Player of the Year. How important is it to his legacy that Minnesota make a run?
I think, I mean, it behooves everybody to be part of a winning deal. I mean, it's, but it doesn't take away from his greatness. I think what's cool about Rudy this year is, you know, when Utah, when he was here, Utah's kind of the butt of the NBA jokes a lot anyway, or has been. I know that that's something we're trying to change, but it's, with Rudy, it was easy to punk Rudy when he was in Utah, and even if Utah people stood up for him, you know, it was kind of looked at like, hey, those are just Utah people. But getting into Minnesota and having guys like Anthony Edwards praise Rudy Gobert, you know, guys like Karl Anthony Towns praise Rudy Gobert, I think it takes on a different tact. And he's got the respect in the league. It's so hard to do what he does. But, man, it never hurts to win. The more you can win, the stronger the ink is, you know, on your name in the book of basketball.
I got some chills watching Mark Pope accept the job yesterday at Kentucky, just seeing the 1996 team come out, seeing the crowd really stand up and get behind Mark Pope after kind of shelling that hire on Thursday night. I thought that was pretty fascinating to watch. What are you expecting from Mark Pope? I think this is... One, I mean, we have such great storylines next year locally that in basically any other year, this might be the top story all of next season.
Well, I actually expected him to, you know, I thought, knowing him, that he might ride off out on a blue elephant. I mean, nothing is too big for this guy. He is, to me, the basketball version of Barnum Bailey. I mean, he can put on a show with the best of them. And now it's, you know, I mean, as always, it's time to... this isn't winning your league, mind you, which he hasn't done yet. This is winning a national championship. That's what he's playing for now. So the stakes are huge, but the best part about Pope is he doesn't care. He looks it right in the eye, and he'll give it a swing. But it was pretty fascinating to see that place sold out. You know, it just shows you that the negative Nellies on Twitter, you know, there's so much negative talk on Twitter that people are either cowards because they either showed up, you know, after writing that they hate the guy. People are either cowards or it's just, you know, a minute piece of negativity that hits Twitter. And the general public seemed pretty fascinated and exciting. So I had no doubt it would be an extravaganza. Let me put it that way. This thing, in my mind, may have been planned for as many as 10 years.
Who will be the next head coach at BYU?
Man. Well, I can tell you with a surety it's not me.
You pulled your name out.
Well, no. Yeah, well, in some respects, yes.
Well, he didn't want to compete with Mike, first of all. I mean, that would make
correct.
For an awkward pregame show.
No, I don't want to leave Jake. You know, we got a good thing going. And coaching is in my rearview mirror big time. But I think it's obvious that the candidates have been named. You know, there's a couple of NBA guys with ties to the church. There's obviously Mark Madsen, who put out a statement yesterday talking about, or 2 days ago, talking about how he's really happy where he is. Madsen's as great a guy as there is. I would have, you know, I love him, and I think he would be great. But he's doing good things at Cal, and I think he's really happy there. You know, he's from there, so he's kind of back home. So I think it leaves, you know, the other names or, you know, three guys that have been in and around, a guy like Quincy Lewis, guy like Chris Burgess at Utah, and Barrett Peery. So I think if you have that big circle right there, you're probably, you know, I would imagine the focus will be there. It's a very small group of people, you know, that are eligible. So I did actually, just out of curiosity, run up a question up the chain. Would they ever hire a non-member? I know it's not in, you know, it's not written anywhere, but it's just always been. And the word I got back was absolutely not. Don't think that will ever happen where there, that will happen, you know, in football and basketball particularly. So I would say it's in that group. And, you know, those guys are all friends of mine, every one of them. And so I'm not going to say who I, you know, I just believe that they'll get somebody good out of that group. And I think BYU can rally behind him. They can start trying to keep players here. And, you know, probably the most important thing is that it happened quickly.
Well, it doesn't appear to be going all that quickly. And I'm curious, I don't know how, you know, if you are all that comfortable answering this, but like the bureaucracy at BYU is different than it is other places. And it seems to me anyway that it goes a little slower because there's more kind of approval that is needed.
Yeah, they're not. And I'll answer your question this way. When we used to do summer camps, we had to hire as many as 100 coaches, you know, 150 coaches. And even for those positions, you know, at our camps, there is a lengthy process that each person has to go through just to get accepted to work camp. So when you're talking about somebody that they're going to have come in and be, you know, an unofficial, but certainly an ambassador for the place, they want to make sure that the person that they get and the school, you know, have matching interests and that everything's on the up and up. So it does take a little bit of time. It does have to run through, you know, the channels, the private university and the board of trustees. Typically, you know, what I've seen is it's taken as many as 3 weeks. And certainly my guess is that they're expediting that. You know, I think it will be fast for BYU, but to the rest of the world, everybody would be wondering what's taking so long.
And I'm in the camp, actually, that if you have to take a little longer to get the right person, that's the most important thing. But, Coach, you are the best. Appreciate you, everything that you do. And, man, it was a crazy year.
It was a crazy year, but a fun one. Got to see some new faces. Got to know new people. Became better friends with this Ben Anderson character, who's a great guy. And I'm looking forward to the offseason, the draft, free agency, summer league, all that stuff, just to be able to see what we're going to be hopefully talking about next year.
UVA never sleeps, that is for sure. Coach, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it.
See you, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
The one and only Tim Lacombe. His appearance on the show brought to you by Spherion Staffing. Go to spherion.com/Utah.
BYU is not really in competition to hire anybody either, so you don't need to rush it. Like, the transfer portal is where the transfer portal is right now, and there's probably a little bit of urgency to get that done. Like, if you think, hey, we've got a chance to keep Dallin Hall in Provo if we get a coach in the next week, but if we wait any longer, there's no doubt that he's going to be gone. Maybe there's a little urgency there, but like...
See, that would also be a little bit different if they were considering somebody on Pope's staff. Like, if you were going to hire Feger to keep some of those guys there. But I think you're going outside of the staff, you're going to lose everybody. I think that's going to be the norm going forward.
And in fact,
really do.
I wonder how much this happens. This is pure speculation and a question on my part. Like, when you're hiring somebody, there's a difference when you're hiring Sprinkle, and it's like, well, do you think this great Osabor kid's going to come with you? He was pretty good. Like, who's going to come with you? That's one thing. Is Darius Brown going to come with you? Those are all part of it. But, like, if Garrett Peery, or Barrett Peery, excuse me, you end up with a job, Who do you think on the transfer portal you could get here?
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
Of course.
And then we're going to make our decision based on that. Not from the team you're with currently, but
what you're talking about happens all the time.
It has to happen.
It does.
Yeah, it has to happen. So you can kind of even test the interview process that way to just figure out who's coming, who's going to be available, who you could bring with them.
Let me put it this way. Do you think it hurt Craig Smith getting the Utah State job that he said, oh, I've got this monster NBA center that would love to come to Logan?
Not even a little bit. Yep, not even a little bit.
I think he'd go well with Sam Merrill if I can get him to stay. I think we'd be really on to something
here. A 1-2 punch there.
One of these things. Huh?
Yeah. So I'm sure that happens, and that might be part of what BYU's going through. And yeah, like I said, there's no competition. These guys they're talking about aren't getting job offers anywhere else. So
they wouldn't appear so anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? If Mark Madsen had said yes, they would have hired Mark Madsen that first day.
Dude, I'm telling you, I'd hire Mike Smith.
Okay.
He told us that the team would be in great shape.
Of course they would.
And then I told him, you can't coach like that anymore. You can't make young people run.
He learned from Red. Was Red Auerbach his coach?
No. He did meet Red several times.
I'm sure, yeah.
But no, yeah. Not his coach.
Well.
He actually, this is kind of funny, but talking to Mike is so interesting. He said Red kind of didn't do him a favor by paying him a nice compliment.
Okay.
That he compared his game to Larry Bird's.
Oh.
And it did not. You know, Mike was never going to be Larry Bird because, you know, nobody's Larry Bird. So kind of set this standard that he couldn't possibly achieve. And certainly fans didn't think that, right?
No, nor should they.
Be like if the late, great Dick Norris called Ben the next Hemingway or something.
Sure.
It'd be like, well, how am I supposed to get to that?
Jimmy Rogers was the coach.
Old James Rogers.
Yeah.
Not a name that inspires confidence for some reason.
No, didn't bring out the best of the Boston Celtics.
Stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. We'll talk a little NBA playoffs. And I've got something to point out to Ben, and I'm curious to your reaction. I want to remind you, don't miss your chance to win big every week on the KSL Sports Zone on Win Ticket Wednesday. You can win a pair of tickets this week to go see Blue October at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on August 24th. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. More coming up straight ahead. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Come on. Yeah.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, want to remind you, Ethan Millard with Teton Wealth will be live in studio with Hans and Scotty today to help you with your retirement plan. Tune in or visit retireteton.com. Ben, we've talked about how the NBA has certain problems that they've been trying to solve.
Uh-huh.
And my issue with the NBA is a lot of times their solutions just add to the problem.
They overcomplicate.
And, of course, our show metaphor comes from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, an episode where Dee gets a cat stuck in her wall.
Yep. Dee is the sister.
The sister. And Charlie, the zany friend, Charlie Kelly, he comes up with a myriad of different solutions.
By the way, us not taking Dennis and Dee in our siblings draft.
Oh, yeah, we missed out on that one.
Whiff.
That would have been a good one.
Anyways.
But all of Charlie's solutions are somehow putting another cat in the wall, and then eventually there's just like dozens of cats in Dee's wall where she started with one. But all the solutions are like, well, we tie a string to the cat's tail and put another cat in there, and then it'll get codependent with the first cat, and then we'll rip the cat out, and then, you know, it never works, and you're just stuck with a dozen cats in the wall.
Yeah.
We need another cat. That's what we need.
Another cat. And the NBA is really good at heaving cats into the wall. Whether it's trying to flatten the lottery odds with the top three in order to curb tanking. How well has that worked?
Not well. You get more teams tanking than ever.
All of a sudden, cats in the wall. All of a sudden, you don't have to tank to number one. All you have to do is tank to number three.
Or four.
Or four.
Four. All has a 25% chance, whatever it is. 14% chance he's the number one pick.
Thanks to that meowing cat, we have four teams that are intentionally trying to lose for the top spot instead of just one or two.
Let me pull this up. We can figure out how many teams tanked last night pretty easily. But anyways, you're right. They have kept...
So with their cat that they put into the wall, all they do is have another cat in the wall. Like, so their problem with team scoreboard watching, they're going to start all the games at 1:30. Well, now you have teams tanking mid-game. Thanks to that cat, got teams tanking mid-game.
I'm just going to run through this really quickly. The Jazz tanked yesterday.
Yeah.
The Cavaliers tanked in the playoffs to change their playoff seeding against a team in the Hornets that was also tanking to try and get the number three seed overall. So those two teams both tanked. The Raptors tanked. We're up to, what, that's four teams now because the Raptors need to finish with the sixth worst record to be able to hold on to their pick. The Bucks tanked because they didn't want to play the Clippers, or excuse me, they didn't want to play the 76ers or the Heat in the first round. The Nets kind of tanked.
To put the pressure on the Jazz, I believe it.
But their pick goes elsewhere anyways. The Grizzlies absolutely tanked against the Nuggets. G.G. Jackson had 44 points in that game. The Mavericks scored 86 points. They lost by 50 in their season finale. Now they were just not playing anybody. I'm not sure that's tanking. Pistons absolutely tanked. We're up to eight teams. And the Trailblazers tanked. I mean, nine teams of the final 30.
I would also maybe throw the Timberwolves in there.
Okay, to not get the number one seed to have to play the Warriors or the Lakers in the first round.
So these cats haven't really solved anything. Now let's get to a cat they threw in the wall to, I don't even know what problem they're trying to solve here, but I guess tanking. But they made the play-in scenario. And you know what, Ben? My gut instinct about the play-in scenario, which was I don't like it, I feel was the correct one. However, I have bent with this one, so I'm not going to pretend like I've been a true believer all the way along. But would yesterday have been better?
Okay, good question.
Had we had the old rules where the top eight seeds make the playoffs and the play-in did not exist, because the Lakers, the Kings, and the Warriors, all three would be playing their brains out because only one out of those three teams could have made the playoffs yesterday. So it wouldn't have been, oh, well, you're still alive playing the play-in scenario. It would have been your eight or curtains.
Yes, you would have seen Steph Curry. You would have seen Draymond Green. You would have seen Klay Thompson in the second half. You would have seen everybody.
The Warriors, they were like, no, we don't care. The Warriors tried to tank mid-game. You see the Jazz almost, I mean, you made this point early in the show. They had to pull everybody.
Everybody, yeah.
Just to lose. The Warriors, mid-game, were like, man, never mind.
Well, and that's just in... I guess the East would have been decided a little earlier because the Heat wrapped up the eighth seed by seven games. So that wasn't as close. You're right, though. You're absolutely. You would have had a better push late in the season from even the Warriors, and they had to put together a strong second half just to get to the 10th seed.
Oh, you would have had a thrilling race to the end, right to the last day. It would have been a huge topic. I mean, LeBron and Steph going head-to-head to make the playoffs. And by the way, let's not pretend like the Kings didn't have to totally crater to get down to this point in the first place. Epic drama!
Yeah.
Epic drama! The play-in cat is totally stinking it up for us.
That stinks! I want to say Friday, the Warriors played the Lakers. Maybe it was Thursday. And LeBron rested. Right? Like, this was a regular season game. Though you would have seen LeBron every single game. Like, if you want full-out, best product, quality over quantity, you would get rid of the play-in tournament.
LeBron could dog it all year and still have a shot to turn it on in the playoffs? Like, if you want to prevent players from resting, but load management or whatever we want to call it, skipping games, well, make the cost punitive.
Jake, I'm not kidding. I won't be surprised if the Lakers tank their first play-in game.
I think they should,
to avoid the Nuggets in the first round and hopefully fall back to the eighth seed, beat the Warriors or the Kings, whoever wins that game, and then beat them in the second play-in tournament game to face the Thunder.
We should have them locked in to play the Thunder. They should be the eighth seed. The Lakers came out with all the tiebreakers or whatever, and all three teams actually won.
Yep.
But I think the end of the season would have been way better if it were the old rules where the top eight make it and that's it. I think the play-in gives teams an excuse to mess with it, which is supposed to be the point. They're supposed to be getting rid of that, not adding stuff that contributes to it. I think it's really frustrating. And you know what? I liked the midseason tournament. I did. But it didn't solve any problems. I mean, it's a more docile cat, but it's still a cat nonetheless.
Yeah. I like the play-in tournament. I like that we've got games to fill in this gap this week. I like that tomorrow night I can turn on two games. I like that Wednesday night I can turn on two games. Thursday and Friday I could have games as well before the playoffs start on Saturday. And that's what the NBA wanted. They didn't want to lose traction. And they wanted to get everyone included, and they get a huge win because there's going to be a ton of eyes on Golden State playing in the play-in tournament. That's a part of it. They want, you know, just Chicago, Atlanta's not going to draw any eyeballs, but you're going to get either Miami or Philadelphia playing a second game, and that will draw a lot of eyeballs. That's the win for the NBA. But you're right. It didn't solve anything.
No, and you know what? I don't really care about that enough because I'd be bent that we played 82 games and it's going to come down to one.
Yeah.
I don't like that about Major League Baseball either.
Right. I'm with you.
It's not supposed to come down to one, especially in baseball. That is a game of series. It's dumb. 82 games comes out of one game.
Yep.
It's artificial, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. It's a cat in the wall.
It's a cat in the wall.
It's absolutely a cat in the wall.
We need another cat. That's what we need.
That's where they are. And then, yeah, the in-season tournament's a whole other animal, which I think is fine, but it's something totally different. And I know it has no indication on the playoffs. But I hope now we get to the postseason, we get the good matchups. Messing with the basketball gods is always interesting, and the Cleveland Cavaliers absolutely did, trying to get the Orlando Magic in the first round versus what probably would have been the Indiana Pacers, which I think they actually probably would have had a better chance against because Cleveland playing a slow-it-down defensive style of game. They were a really good defensive team to start the year. They haven't played defense at all since the trade deadline, if not earlier. I think that's going to be dangerous. And if you're a Jazz fan, you know what you're rooting for? Chaos. If you're a Jazz fan, you want to see what's best for you. You actually want Cleveland to lose. I know a bunch of Jazz fans have followed the team to Minnesota and love Rudy and love Mike Conley. You probably want Minnesota to lose. You want all these teams with big salaries and young players to be bad and their owners to get shaky and feel like, oh, well, we can't afford this team and we want to start trading pieces. So that's every team that's in that second apron has these huge salaries. You want those teams to start losing and make their players available because that's where the Jazz can step in and be dangerous.
Sounds like the only player that's going to be available is Donovan Mitchell.
Maybe Donovan. It would be ironic if the two players that become available are Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell.
It won't be Rudy.
No, they're gonna stick with Rudy. I suspect finish his career there.
I don't think he can. They can really move on from Rudy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, Rudy's playing so well right now that there would still be interest in him again.
But his contract stinks.
His contract is still huge, and he's a very good fit for that team.
Yeah, well, he solves a unique problem, which is the reason he's there in the first place. But I think if it comes down to moving, he or Karl Anthony Towns, they'll move Cat.
And Cat's a lot easier to move. It's both easier to move and probably the right fit.
And get more back.
Yeah.
And every shot Cat takes, Anthony Edwards isn't. So, I don't know. But I love the experiment. I always have. I'm kind of pulling forward to succeed, honestly. I don't care about the Jazz picks.
I think the Wolves should honestly dismiss the Suns relatively easily, but Kevin Durant and Devin Booker should be good enough to win two games in every series. Now, they should be better than the sixth seed in the West, but those guys have a ton of playoff experience, and those guys can really get buckets. It's going to be on Anthony Edwards, I think, to have a big series. But, man, I'd love to have Rudy. You know, one of Rudy's worst highlights, his low lights, is trying to go out and guard Devin Booker on the perimeter and the baseline. And he kind of turns him around, and I know that was one of the reasons why everyone made fun of Rudy. So it'd be a good chance to get back and eliminate KD and Devin in the first round.
Man, I wish Kelly Olynyk were playing. Nobody can alter a playoff landscape like the clinic.
Drop the elbow.
Maybe Zaza.
Not Zaza.
Still Zaza. Zaza. Maybe Zaza.
Zaza Gabor.
Maybe Zaza Pachulia. Who went code red on Kawhi Leonard, totally altered, basically stole a championship from the Spurs.
Got the Warriors their first title. Pretty impressive.
But I don't know, the clinic taking out, going code red on Kevin Love's pretty big deal.
Speaking of Kelly Olynyk, he played well in Toronto to end his season. Ochai Agbaji, now it's going to take him a while to adjust, but Ochai's last 27 games in Toronto averages I did. Again, this is one of my the funniest things that happens in the NBA is players are exactly who they are. I've tweeted this out before. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen it. Your averages are going to be your averages wherever you go. Like, you are your player. Rarely does a guy get traded and they turn into somebody else. It does happen. Look at Lauri Markkanen, but generally guys are who they are. Exact same 6.7 points per game that he averages his first 2 years at Utah is what he's averaging over his final 27 games in Toronto. Problem is 39% from the floor, 21% from the three-point line. 3.3 rebounds, 1.3 assists.
Not good enough.
Not sure he's a guy. Well, and I think the Jazz said, let's cut bait on that.
They might have. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's got to shoot better. Physical specimen, though. That's why he's tempting.
Better athlete than basketball player.
At the moment.
Yeah.
All right, stay tuned. We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You really should. They're amazing. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson.
WNBA mock draft, or real draft tonight, but the mock drafts all have Alyssa Pealy going in the first round. We will have to track that tonight.
Did you see Caitlin Clark's appearance on Weekend Update on SNL?
I did indeed.
Hilarious. Did you see it, Sarah?
I did, yes.
Okay, so I had such, and we don't need to dive into it too deeply for those that didn't see it. But, like, I had no hope when I watched the first part of it because she's obviously not an actress.
She's robotic.
Yeah.
She's pretty robotic.
Very, which is fine. You know, we're not all gifted in such ways. But I thought, oh, this is not going to go well because she's, you know, that it's not her thing. And they turned it into a bit. Michael Che, I guess, has
made fun of women's sports
for a long time.
It's been
a running bit. And so they compiled a bunch of examples of that. And then the bit was with Caitlin, and I think they blindsided Michael with it. It felt like it. They did. If he did a good job faking it, if he knew it was coming. But she wrote like three jokes for him to do on Weekend Update, and they were all hilarious. Yep. They were all making fun of him. Actually, if she wrote those jokes, she's not bad.
If she wrote those, yes, it'd be very good.
They were all really good jokes.
Regardless, it hit. It was very funny to have
her up there. Hilarious.
And good for her for, A, playing along, which she doesn't have to do, but, B, delivering a great message. You know,
also, the apron was a nice touch.
Yes. Hilarious. She gave him an apron because he made some sort of joke involving an apron.
They were retiring her jersey.
Yeah.
And he said something like, now she can get out of her jersey into an apron, which obviously was... The joke is that it's so overtly
over the top.
Sexist. Yes.
Yes, comedy. I understand comedy. I know we're all sensitive about things these days. But
it's
we
so
can still
overtly
laugh.
Yeah. Offensive.
Over the top.
Is
that's the
joke.
Point.
But, yeah, and then she signed an apron and gave it to him at the end.
But
and
her having a sense of humor about it makes it great. It's awesome. Anyway, Sarah, sorry.
I was just going to say, he goes, oh, like, my girlfriend were like this. And she goes, you don't have a girlfriend.
Hilarious.
Yep.
But it's actually that line that makes me think, like, maybe the whole thing was scripted.
But they do that a lot.
Because that line was too perfect. You know what I mean?
They write a lot of jokes for each other, not knowing what is going to be on the cue cards. But, yeah, she was great. Good for her. And the mock draft tonight, the draft tonight, she's obviously going number one overall.
The joke she made about the Indiana Fever, because that's where she's going to go, is something passed around the Purdue campus by
Michael
Che.
Yeah, very funny.
Oh. So funny. So funny. And I'm not a huge SNL person. I can't remember the last time I really dove into SNL. I didn't even like it back in its heyday when, I don't know, in the 90s when I was growing up. It never really was my thing. But that was really funny.
That was a good episode.
Our 50 segments are brought to you, as always, by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today. For your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. How much did Indiana have to tank it to get into that
spot?
Well,
they didn't know if Caitlin Clark was even going to declare this year. That was kind of the weird thing. Now, she ended up doing it, but I think some people were wondering, oh, would she wait a year to maybe go to a better franchise? She did not. But I don't know. I don't know how much tanking actually goes on because, like, the Sparks are historically a pretty good team. They actually have the second and the fourth pick because they traded a pick last year. So they're going to add two major stars. But, the Indiana Fever. We'll see how quickly they can get it together around Caitlin.
Coming up next, Hans Olsen and Scotty G. We will talk to you tomorrow. Big day on the show tomorrow. Danny Ainge should be available, I believe, tomorrow during our show. I don't want to break any news, but I think that's the plan.
Yep.
We'll also hear from others in the jazz world, the Jazz Orbit tomorrow. Hopefully that'll be some during our show as well.
Yep.
Stay tuned. Hans and Scotty G coming up next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.